The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world. Would you say the national sport of our peoples is football, baseball, or basketball, or just what is it? Now, in Britain, perhaps it's football, and in the United States, perhaps it's our kind of football, or maybe baseball. But it's not really. That's a fact. Honesty today is looked upon as totally old-fashioned, as impractical and outdated, an unworkable value that has been proved useless in our modern competitive society. And people think that faithfulness, loyalty, and honesty are replaced in today's business world by deceit and hypocrisy, by lying and stealing. And so today is a sort of a bizarre form of entertainment, almost a national pastime. The common sport and pursuit of many people is the idea of getting the edge on your fellow man, of getting ahead, of achieving success. These are the driving goals of the modern man and woman of commerce and industry, and they'll cheerfully admit, many of them, that they will stop at virtually nothing to achieve these goals. Even young boys in high school and college are admitting that they will stop at nothing. They say they will step on people to get where they're going. Now, what is this success of which most people speak today? The happiness is this and that, the idea about what success is. Well, to most people, it's measured by the possession of material goods, the things you own, the clothes you wear, the people you know, the places you go, the things you do, the automobiles you own, how many and what type, how many homes and where they're located, and the height to which they're located on the hill seems to have something to do with it, at least in Southern California. Success is having prestige and power. It's having money and the influence of money, the importance in the eyes of other people. It's being popular, being famous, or being powerful. And getting there, wherever that there is, has become almost a sport. It's like a favorite hobby, the cherished pastime of millions of our people, of how to get the boss's job, of how to win at poker, how to land on Easy Street without half trying, or like the Broadway musical, how to succeed in business without really trying. No wonder it was successful, because people want to succeed without really trying. And if they do try, the chances are they're trying in the wrong direction. And it's amazing because today there are no stigmata even being attached to lying, cheating, misrepresenting businessmen, military officers, or housewives and shoplifters. These are our accepted way of life. Now, I was talking, for instance, recently about the tremendous amounts of pilferage and shoplifting on the part of Mrs. World, Mrs. Housewife, wherever she is in the world. Primarily, I had statistics about American shoplifting, but also I had statistics about British crime and Australian crime and shoplifting and how it's on the rise in these countries as well. And I've commented in the past about the tremendous mountainous rise of crime in the Philippines, of how teenage gangs run rampant in the streets of the big cities, the villages and towns, and how oftentimes a man can be in peril of his fingers or his hand to even drive along with his watch and his ring on his left hand outside of his automobile. Of how teenagers have advanced toward passers-by waiting for buses on street corners and threatening them with razors or knives, stolen their jewelry, watches, rings, wallets. Crime is on the increase around the world. But you know, it's not always the institution that is stolen from. There is also the other side of the coin. For example, have you ever picked up a giant-sized box of detergent? It's labeled giant size, only to find out that later on it's dwarfed by the family size. If you just look a little further in the counter, the family size box is a whole lot bigger than the giant size. Makes you wonder what's the next size they'll come up with. City water tank size? Or did you ever buy frozen vegetables labeled to serve six? And you couldn't stretch it to six unless you ran the risk of malnutrition for that six. It really only served five. Now, in a Senate subcommittee report, it was revealed before the United States Senate that in one survey, a supermarket indicated the average family wastes about $81 a year on packaged food because of poor or confusing labels. And there has been a great deal of government research into mislabeling and packaging processes and principles that are being used in the display methods of American supermarkets and chain stores and the like. And nationwide, it was estimated this amounted up to a loss of about 4 and 5 tenths billion dollars per year. Now, of course, that's a guess, it's an estimation. But that's the amount that people are wasting, the extra dollars that are being spent for which they are not getting produce. And that, incidentally, is double the amount of dollars represented as being lost by shoplifting. A packaging designer said, where the level of competition is so keen and one product is as good as another, you must create the illusion that a product is better, and that's where we come in. You see, many people don't seem to realize that 5 or 6 different varieties of cigarettes are made by the same company. That 5 or 6 different varieties of soaps are made by the same company in the same vats and sometimes are the same colors, but they're in different packages. That sometimes it's exactly the same substance, but unless each company feels it has 5, 6, 8, or even 10 products in different attractive packages and labels on the shelves, it cannot successfully continue in competition with the many other labels of only one other packaging company, or producer, or manufacturer. And it's getting so that in supermarkets you need 2 great big counters about 100 yards long filled on both sides with detergents and soaps alone. And each one of them is guaranteed to get your clothes cleaner than all the rest. So presumably, you take anyone, give or take a couple of hundred of them, now any one of them, and you wash your clothes, and you are therefore absolutely guaranteed by the packaging, your clothes are nowhere near as clean as they would have been had you washed your clothes with a detergent right next to that detergent. So you dutifully go back and you take that detergent and you put it into your machine and you wash your clothes again and they come out whiter. Even whiter than white. Now that's, of course, an impossible superlative because white means the absence of all other color. And they're completely sparkling white. Some of them get all the way to right. And some of them have a kind of a blue-white. Some of them, actually, apparently, according to TV commercials, you have to wear thick sunglasses. You can get something akin to snow blindness from looking at your sheets and linens. Now, this type of thing in advertising and in packaging and in the claims made for certain commodities, I think, is taken with a kind of a harumph and a scowl and sometimes a kind of a chuckle by Americans who seem to be impressed by a rock and roll song, and apparently the better somebody can execute the song and the classier and the jazzier it is, the better the automobile is. It is being sung while you're watching this fastback, whatever that means, automobile roaring around mountain roads at speeds all out of proportion to safety and breaking the law, the chances are. And the tricks that are done with cameras of whirling them around in circles and having the car drive right over the camera and all kinds of real quick little blurbs of one corner of a fender and then the way the letters are on the deck lid and then the picture of the gaily whirling blonde with her hair flying out the window going around the corner on 2 wheels and so on. These things are supposed to sell automobiles. And the American public, realizing all the dishonesty and the claims and all the packaging and the mislabeling and so on, feels justified in stealing, in cheating, in lying, and misrepresenting themselves. So it works both ways. It's not only Mrs. Housewife who is stealing from the supermarket, but the supermarkets themselves display what they are given by various packaging concerns. And of course, increasingly, large supermarket chains do their own packaging and have their own labels. It's kind of like a game, then. It's kind of like a sport of seeing who can cheat who the quickest and avoid getting caught. And so getting there, wherever that there is, has become almost a sport. It's a favorite hobby, the cherished pastime of so many people. Now, you look at the phenomenal amounts of money lost through shoplifting and the amounts lost through false labeling and packaging. Then you look at the out-and-out pilfering and the thievery in chain stores, department stores, drug stores, supermarkets, and you begin to realize something is drastically wrong with our society. And the reaction of people is just exactly the same reaction that Adam had when he was caught with the goods in the Garden of Eden. He didn't do it. It was his wife's fault. She did it first. Therefore, he was justified. But she had an excuse. She didn't do it. That serpent had an argument. She fell for it. It was his fault. Our reaction today is one evil plus one evil equals no evil. One sin plus one sin equals no sin. That's kind of a strange arithmetic, but that's the way people reason. You steal from me, so that justifies my thievery from you. I cheat you because I think you may cheat me. I steal from you because you stole from me first, and then we make each other honest by saying, yeah, but you see, that's just the way it's done. So therefore, we're both honest because we all understand that we're playing according to the rules of this strange game of ours of cheating each other constantly. A national study of college cheating revealed that 55% of college students cheat. Now, I want to remind you that college students are the leaders in commerce, business, industry, government, the military of tomorrow year. Presumably. Now, this frightens me when I think of that. But at least that is pretty much a correct statement. And when you find out that 55% of them cheat in their grades, then you realize that a tremendous percentage of them, when they get that sheepskin, have a document shot through with holes, false standards, lyings, and cheatings, and that it doesn't really represent what they themselves have accomplished. It represents what they have been able to buy or what they were able to accrue to themselves through cheating and lying and conniving and stealing. And so what value is there in a sheepskin when a college student comes knocking on your door if you are the department personnel manager? And the figure may even be higher. Now, this national study showed that cheating was three times as prevalent as most college deans thought it was, and that it occurs twice as often as students think it does. It was a two-year study. It was very thorough. It was based on a survey of 600 deans and almost 6,000 students at 99 different colleges, and was prepared by William J. Bowers for the Bureau of Applied Social Research at Columbia and supported by a grant from the United States Office of Education. Now, Mr. Bowers' survey showed that 74% of those who hold athletic scholarships cheat. These are the fellows who you rise up and scream for as they make the dunk shot with 3 seconds to go and the score is tied on the basketball court. These are the fellows that are running up and down with a football clutched in their arms on the track or the football field. These are the fellows that set our records, that are our athletes. Not all of them, to be sure, but 74% of those who held athletic scholarships were cheaters on their grade. Now, this doesn't even shock anybody. And most people say, well, you see, I have a reason why I could justify that, they say. The grades that are set as standard for the athletes are too high, and therefore, in order to play the sport, and of course they ought to do that, and people want them to, well, therefore they just ought to cheat because they should be able to get by with lower grades. That's the way people reason. It's crazy reasoning. It's illegal and unlawful reasoning. It's dishonest reasoning, but that's human reasoning, isn't it? Now, 45% of students whose scholarships were based on academic ability cheated, too. And furthermore, it was found that 37% of all A students were cheating to get those grades. Now, Mr. Bowers found that academic dishonesty is especially disturbing because all colleges are responsible for selecting and trying to select the most able and promising members of the younger generation and preparing them to become the future leaders of society, as I said. And he fears, to the extent that dishonesty in college leads to dishonesty after college, that this is going to crop up among the more prominent members of society. Now, I don't know why you would fear that, because it already has. As I've been saying in the past several programs, in these laws against human nature, the right standards, I've been talking about the Ten Commandments, about the Eighth and Ninth Commandments, and revealing the tremendous obsession with thievery, with crime, with stealing, pilferage, lying, cheating, dishonesty in our societies today, and the methods we use to try to justify it, that high in the managerial field, and the higher you go up the executive ladder, the more sure you are. So say some of the real source materials and some of the surveys that have been made. The more positive you are of discovering every type of chicanery and fiddle-footed lying and cheating, very high. And so people, of course, are suspicious of government and of management, of executives. And I suppose with good reason, because after all, it's not uncommon knowledge that people high up the ladder cheat. And so this man said, to the extent that dishonesty in college leads to dishonesty after college, it can become rather a gloomy picture for society at large. And it becomes even darker when you find that two-thirds of the students majoring in business and commerce, that this was the highest rate, that they cheat. And that was versus 39% of those in the humanities field. So that when you transfer it to the economic, to the commercial, to the business sections of the studies of most colleges, you find two-thirds of them cheating. Is it any wonder then, when they get on up into business, that you find they're going to cheat you as a consumer, and each other, and even themselves? Now, anybody today who believes otherwise, who believes in being absolutely honest and faithful,
who believes in being royal is looked upon as a sucker, a square, a kind of a naive babe in the woods who will never get ahead, whatever that means. They say you get ruthless or you don't make it. You get dirty and dishonest, you get to become a cheating liar whose word is worth exactly one hoot in a whirlwind. It's worth maybe three minus signs and a zero. It's worth one raised eyebrow and two skeptical looks. That's what it's worth. You either become this kind of a characterless personality, or they say you are doomed to failure. Now, what failure is, well, that's middle class. That's middle class income. It's failure to get the home on the hill, the extra car, the tailor-made clothes, and country club membership. Failure today is looked upon as failing to make it to that pinnacle of material success. So, scientific and technological achievements with full pocketbooks and bank accounts and empty lives. Empty, wretched, increasing illegitimacy and immorality. It happens to be increasing problems and skyrocketing and spiraling problems that go up and up and up. And that our FBI and our law enforcement agencies say perils and threatens the very continuance of our Western world of freedom. What has this idea of ours, this idea of I'll cheat you because you're about to cheat me, what has it really got us? Worldwide, our image from the United States, now you British people will have to write to some of the people in the United States and tell them this is true. I can't convince people because people will believe exactly what they want to believe. I travel in Europe and Britain and around the world often enough. In nations such as Japan or Australia or even South Africa. But I can tell you this is true. But many people in America refuse to believe it, that worldwide our image, our picture, is the image of dollar-hungry, loud-mouthed, gum-chewing, camera-toting pseudo-millionaires who have all the tact of a rhinoceros, the delicacy of an elephant, the courtesy of a bobcat, and the patience of a hungry lion. You can see them sitting around in some of the restaurants in very, very fabulous old world places with all their arguments and their excuses and reasonings and their bickerings and gripings at the service, the waitress and the country, the climate, the roadways, the automobiles, the kind of food and everything in general. And that's a fact. That's the way we are looked upon in the world. The dollar-hungry, loud-mouthed man with gum in his mouth, dollars in his wallet, briefcase in his hand, who believes he doesn't need to speak your language. All he's got to do is shout English a lot more loudly. At home, we look upon ourselves as the briefcase-carrying faceless man in the gray suit with the natural shoulders and peg pants who daily fights his way to the office. And then he fights with his fellow employees and his boss to get the boss's job. Then he fights his way home to fight with his wife and kids so he can fight sleep. And then he fights the wakefulness, and then he fights his way back to the office again. He's sort of like an automaton who was so committed to his automatic living, so plugged into his routines, his trips and sales records, computers and tax reports, that he never has the time to ask himself if it's really worth it all. You ever see the plugged-in automaton, the faceless man in the gray suit with the briefcase, and realize what's happening to our lives today? He's the escapist who never escapes, the dreamer who plunges into his daily routines in the hope he can escape from ever having to do them again, like the little high school kid who said, I enjoy the good things. I want success, and I'll step on people to get it. And so the faceless man in the gray suit with a briefcase who stampedes to the office every day is the guy who's doing precisely that. He's trying to step on people. But everybody else is trying to step on him, too. And like a stampeding mob at a horrible theater fire like the one back in Chicago so many years ago, everybody's trying to clamber and climb and claw his way over everybody else and never take the time to ask, is it really worth it? What is it I'm after? It's about time we re-evaluated our course, personally and nationally and internationally. It's about time we ask ourselves where we're headed. What is our life? What is the stuff of which our daily existence consists? Why are we here? What is our purpose in living? Where are we going? There's only one source to which you can go to find out. Science can't tell you. Scientists candidly admit they don't know, and even though evolutionists try to explain the origin of life on this planet without a life giver and without pre-existing life of the same kind, they admit they have no information and no purpose about the existence of life on this earth. They have no reason for the purpose of it. They can't tell you the direction of it. They can't tell you where we're going and why we're here. Did you ever stop long enough in this harrying world of dog-eat-dog to think about the things that really need to be thought about? You know, one of the biggest educational failures of this world? It's behind the purpose for this program, when you understand it. There has never been a greater gap between the seriousness of our personal and private, our national and our world situations, and the public understanding of it. There has never been such an educational failure. And that is the lack of the effort to get the facts of our world situation before the public and the ability or the inability, better said, of people to use those facts. Now, as a matter of fact, a Mr. George F. Kennan of the New England Teachers recently had said that it is harder to believe that this man today, behind the masses of gleaming artifacts, has not appreciably changed. To remember that he is still, even at the wheel of his shiny machine, the same old subject of the biblical allegory, the perpetrator of 10,000 bestialities, the theater of a tragic conflict between his own physical and moral nature. Since the body of data is growing beyond the capacity of the human memory, Mr. Kennan had said, the goal must be the understanding of men and nations rather than information and memory. And he cited as educational failure the inability of people to grasp the meaning of world situations as one of the greatest crises in education today. And that is a fact. Most people simply will not take time to look at the world the way it is, to look at their nation, their society, to look at themselves, and to admit to themselves something is deeply wrong, to know the problems before we face them, and to face the problems before we solve them. People simply will not do this. They're playing a game of hide their eyes from reality and go seek some form of escapism. Now, there's only one source to which you can go to get the answers for our problems, the solutions to them, and how to get rid of some of your own obnoxious worries and fears, complexes, some of the things that burden you down. And I'm not talking about a pick-yourself-up-by-your-bootstraps personal philosophy of life. I'm talking about living laws, living standards of life that will give you every blessing and every benefit you really want. I'm talking about a warm, loving, positive law of peace that will grant you prosperity and happiness, that gives you the greatest principles for living and the greatest reason for living of any code, any standard of life. And these are the Ten Commandments found in your Bible. And regardless as to what you think about the Bible or the Ten Commandments, you will have to admit it would be a fabulously wonderful world if everybody everywhere obeyed every last one of them. Now, the Ninth Commandment says, you shall not bear false witness. The Eighth one said, you shall not steal. The Seventh said, thou shalt not commit adultery. Can you even begin to believe what a fabulous world it would be if everyone obeyed any one of those three alone, or all three of them? You can pick any one of the Ten Commandments and just let yourself muse about what kind of a world would it be if everyone everywhere obeyed just that one. But if everyone obeyed all of the commandments, then what a world it would be. Now, the Apostle Paul in the New Testament of your Bible calls the Ten Commandments spiritual, meaning absolutely unperishable, continuing perennially on down through history. Christ said he didn't come to do away with them. A lot of people say he did. It seems to be increasing numbers of the clergy for some crazy, strange reason. Where do they get it? I don't know. I can't find it from Genesis to Revelation. But some of them get the weirdest idea. It makes you dizzy to think that somebody could come up with the idea that the law of God is done away. When Christ said he didn't do anything of the kind, when the Apostle Paul calls it holy, just, and good, and said, I myself serve the law of God. And where it says in 1 John 5:3, this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments. It doesn't say some new commandment. People get some of the craziest ideas that the law is done away. Can you imagine some idiot sect of people believing in and preaching that gravity isn't true, that the world is flat, that there isn't any such thing as magnetism or polarity, that there isn't any such thing as cause and effect, and denying every known physical, chemical, natural law of which you know, and they sit in some cave somewhere and pore over a lot of ancient old documents they dug up in some vase and begin to try to tell you there isn't any such thing as gravity? Would you believe them? Well, I don't think you would. Now, that'd be about the biggest idiot sect that the world had ever seen. But there are people that somehow begin to assume that Christ came along to do away with a law that says you're not to steal from your neighbor. That he came to set himself against, to set his jaw and his forehead against the law that says you're not to commit adultery, and to give you liberty and freedom to go out and to freely have every kind of experience before, during, and after marriage with any member of the opposite or the same sex that you can talk into it by any kind of ridiculous reasoning imaginable. Licentiousness. Liberty without bounds. But people have a false label on liberty, too. They say, well, you see, I'm human. And that means it's human to cheat. It's human to be brutish and selfish and lustful and filled with vanity. So they say, well, I'm human. Well, you know, it's not right to be human. It just is. It's not right to be human. And the designer of human life has something in mind, a greater calling, a higher life form to achieve. This law of God, which the New Testament calls spiritual, holy, just, and good, is a law that goes absolutely contrary to human nature and all our excuses about being human. But it's a law that will give you the blessings out of life you really want. First of all, it gives you spiritual and mental peace of mind. It'll give you physical health, happy marriages and homes and families, happy relations with friends and neighbors, security, safety, financial blessings. The laws of God are the very cause that will produce everything you want out of life. It's about time you looked into them. It's about time some of you businessmen and sales personnel and truck drivers and elevator operators and housewives and fathers and mothers began to put into practice in your daily way of living this spiritual law of love that gives you such a payoff and such benefits when you put it into use in your own life. Now, don't kid yourself, it's done away. That's ridiculous. I can prove that to you real easy. If you want to write a book that's on the subject, you can prove it yourself just by picking up any concordance and looking up every word where you can find the word law in the New Testament, as far as that's concerned. You don't need somebody there to convince you of it. You can't do away with half of the New Testament because you find one or two vague scriptures people like to try to use to claim Christ came along with a new commandment. That new commandment to love him and to obey his calling doesn't mean to do away with God's Ten Commandments. Write for this booklet on the Ten Commandments. And write for the article on were the Ten Commandments in force before Moses. There's a good one for you. Were they in force before Moses? And the one on the Ten Commandments. It's free of charge, no price. It shows you how they are applicable today. And the current number of the Plain Truth magazine, 52 pages, full color, with this article on a four-eyed look at evolution. Free of charge if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.